You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north from Lake Wissota on this Tuesday morning, July 22nd, 8:06 the time right now. We've got Parker Olson producing this fine program down in Madison Studio A2. We've got Chad Holmes standing by from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot reporting live from EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh, where we have chased her back into the tent for sound muffling purposes. It's amazing how when you get together thousands of planes and people, it gets a little noisy out there. And so back at the campground, things are a little more quiet.
They are. The volunteers and people have gone inside now, and now I get to sit here in peace and quiet in my hot tent. It's getting hot in here.
It is, aren't you? You got the one fan that you said is.
Yep. Here's the good old fan. That's the trusty old solar power fan. Only air moving in here at the moment. Got the windows open, trying to stay cool. But you know, it's a beautiful day here. The sun is shining. Awesome. In Oshkosh, but I know a lot of the state is pretty cloudy out there this morning. Temperatures right now 63 degrees to about 73 degrees statewide. Winds aren't moving too much either. We've got that warm front starting to push on in. We do have a small chance for a few spotty sprinkles that could pop up later this afternoon far, far northwest in the state. Otherwise, we're just going to get warm and muggy today. The dew points climbing into the 70s alongside temperatures going to the mid-80s statewide to near 90 degrees far west in the state. And it's just going to be feeling very sticky, oppressive out there, and only getting worse as we go through to tomorrow. An extreme heat warning is going to go out tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. through Thursday, 7 p.m., because it's going to be feeling like triple digits. Of course, temperatures are going to climb into the 90s, dew point still in the 70s, so it is going to be very hot and sticky as we go through the next few days. And that front's going to spark some strong to severe storms potentially, too. We've got a slight risk throughout the state starting off tomorrow and kind of moving its way through. I'd say 5 a.m. expect some storms to start to spark tomorrow. And then by 8 a.m., it looks like they're going to hit me in Oshkosh. And of course, we are still looking at more sparking up behind that tomorrow night, and then waves as we go into the evening as well. So some active weather headed our way. Of course, strong winds, hail, and tornadoes are possible too. But not today. Today's still decent. We're just building the heat today.
Good. Now, we talked last hour about what you did yesterday, walking around, seeing things, the Goodyear blimp and other sites. So now you're going into today. Do you make a plan? Because I looked at the schedule. It is ambitious. There's a lot going on at any given time. So do you go through with kind of a list of things that you want to hit, or are you just completely freewheeling?
So over the years, I have learned to pick one thing a day that you want to do and just make that your priority, and then everything else will fall into place. If you've got one thing, you'll accomplish it. So my one thing today is going to be warbirds. I'm going to be headed over to the warbird section to see what they're doing. I know that they got the B-29s back again, and it's rare to see them, so I'm pretty excited for that and see what they have going on there. They have reenactments and awesome, cool-looking planes. And then I think tomorrow I'm going to go to the aerobatics. So all the upside-down, loop-de-loopy guys flying around, see what they're up to.
All right. And from Rob in Tigerton, a little advice. Drink plenty of water. He says, I got Greg in my head now when I'm mowing. See, she's got the water bottle. She is ready to go. I'm assuming you're sitting cross-legged in your tent there in Oshkosh, which is, I mean, I'm just kind of jealous as somebody who's now officially now too old to sit cross-legged on the floor the way that other people can. So much less get in the tent. So Tom and Jackson on the text line telling you to be safe as well today, but you know, just enjoy the day.
Thank you. Thank you so much, you guys. You're the best.
All right. We'll talk to you a little later. Thanks, Brittany.
All right.
Bye-bye. Chad Holmes joins us as well from Wausau. Chad, if I might start going back to the comment sections here, And some folks, I don't put it up on screen or share names. Some comments just deserve a quick response. And this one from our last segment about the increase in measles cases, the increase in tick-borne illnesses. The comment says, I'm 71. Any reason why I would care about ticks and kids getting measles? And sir, this show is not here to teach you to care. If you don't care by now about kids getting measles or a changing climate or whatever, this might not be the show for you. We're here specifically for people who care.
I'm gonna be Santa Claus here this morning.
Oh,
because I'm gonna be nice to that guy.
Okay,
I'm gonna give him an article that he'll probably just love reading.
All right.
Because I'm going to make him feel good this morning, because if this guy wants to have somebody tell him things that this guy wants to hear, go to wasapilotsandreview.com and listen and read Tom Tiffany's letter to the editor from yesterday.
Oh, no.
Because this guy probably say, boy, that Tom is telling me all the things I really want to hear. And this world is perfect because people like Tom Tiffany are doing the right things. Actually, it's... You know, I think it's similar here. It's like this gentleman obviously doesn't give a darn about anything outside of the four walls of his house. And I think for the most part, even those that disagree with us politically, they do care. And there can be disagreements on maybe what the best path forward is. And I know there are disagreements. In fact, on Saturday, I had an event. And... it was for a local group that provides help for families in our area that are battling cancer. And this is it's very interesting because I really like what they're doing in terms of there are other groups that are raising money to try to find the cure. But this group is actually taking care of people that are in the midst of it right now, especially kids, being able to send them off to a camp. And I had a discussion with one of the gentlemen involved in this group on Saturday. I didn't want to be honest with you on Saturday. I don't want to go deep into some of these conversations, but he starts sat down and starts talking about how wishes there were no taxes at all, that everybody should just take care of everybody else, that would be better off if we were, you know, just basically had no government. And boy, and I'm thinking, I really don't want to get into this on a Saturday morning, but I got into it and I gave my point of view that, you know, number one, it's a self-fulfilled prophecy when it comes to those on the right, when it comes to government, and the best government being no government, because you run on government being bad. When you get in, of course, you're going to, incentive is there to be good government? Because they say it's all bad. And right. Then they got into the discussion of the Gilded Age, and I was drained by the end of it, but I don't know where I'm going with this.
I'll tell you what,
that guy got me going on that.
I had such an interesting conversation yesterday with somebody who was here to work on one of our appliances. So I had this appliance service tech in, and he's hearing me, and then we get to talking afterwards, and he, like many folks up here, describes himself as a conservative. He listens to a lot of talk radio throughout the course of the day, but he is increasingly turned off by the extremism of the far right talkers. And as I held, you know, as I made my points with him, as I've done countless times over the years, and talking to people who are, you know, center right to my degree of being center left, and we agree that there's so much more of us in the center, we're turned off by extreme voices, by my way or the highway, and we're looking for ways to work together. And by the time all said and done, he was like, I wish I would have had a chance to vote for you back when you were in the legislature and all that. And again, it sounds good in theory, but you have to have these conversations, as difficult as they are. And I wasn't sure I wanted to get into this conversation, but, you know, people do genuinely want to express themselves without being told, you know, you're wrong, you're dumb, but instead, have you thought of it this way? And that's the way we're going to move forward, you know, in this country, is having to have, you know, one conversation at a time. Now, I'm not saying it can overcome $1 billion worth of political ads,
right?
But you got to start somewhere.
And I think the bottom line point to be made in this is, I disagreed completely with this gentleman in terms of that conversation when it came to his viewpoint on what government should or should not be, mm-hmm. and the role of government and the role of taxes and the like. But at the same time, this is a gentleman that's actually putting up. You know, it's either put up or shut up.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's putting up. He is actually out there working to provide help to families with cancer. So I have the ultimate respect there. And having these discussions with somebody like that, who I know has his heart in the right place, but yet is truly a believer that no government is the best government. And frankly, I think you probably had a better grasp of the conversation than I did, because I get too overly emotional at times, yeah. with some of these conversations. But I think the bottom line point is, man, I mean, you know, if I was to say, well, this guy, you know, believes in no government and no taxes, my first thought, well, this is a very selfish person, and this guy is not a selfish person. So there are so many complexities when it comes to the conversations and the issues at hand, and the point that we stand at, I guess, as citizens in our democracy in 2025.
Well, yes, and it's very clear that it's important where people get their information. I know that the gentleman I was talking to yesterday, you know, said a couple of things where I was like, well, if I were in more of a debate frame of mind, I would call things up and go, it's not exactly like that. It's more like this. But at the time, it was just better to listen and to say, okay, yeah, I'm hearing what you're saying. And when the time is right, maybe we'll carry that conversation a little bit further. But I am reminded of yesterday's conversation about primary elections. And we're going to visit that topic again with Dan Schaefer in just under 20 minutes here. That there are some folks that will do anything to avoid primaries, Democrats and Republicans alike, that they're bad. And that, of course, gets other people very flustered. And I tell you, by the time that Kristen Lyerly and I got done having that conversation yesterday, we're pretty sure we cheesed off, you know, most of our friends in Democratic circles in one way or another, because they're both right and they're both wrong in various circumstances. And you just got to, again, the larger point being, you got to have the conversations about this on a case by case basis, whether it's should there be a primary versus should we raise the minimum wage versus, hey, you're helping these folks with cancer, but maybe we could have a system where people don't go bankrupt if they have cancer. A crazy idea. I'm going to talk about it in the next segment with the Affordable Care Act premiums going up, but maybe we need to fix the entire system so we don't need to have so much charity care going on out there.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, it's complex. People have to think. And I think, you know, having the conversation, I heard your conversation. There were points in your conversation yesterday where I was cheesed off on it. I mean, because when you start talking about, again, Rebecca Cook, my first thought comes, that's dumb ad where she's standing in the middle of the road saying pox on both your houses.
Yes. And I mean, that really bothered you. I remember that. Yep.
And I know, and that is the honest truth. And so it's like, I don't want to clear the primary over there for that. I mean, but at the same time, there were so many good points involved in it as well. So it's like, there's so much to it. And
there's so much to it. And again, one conversation at a time. Don't tune out. It's the people who tune out entirely that concern me most of all, because then, I mean, you're susceptible to almost anything out there. Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO and Wausau. Catch him in Wausau for the local updates and, of course, across the Civic Media app and on the website as well. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it. All right. Again, when we come back, some of you have a local break. And then later on, Dan Schaefer in our next half hour from the Recombobulation area here live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
If you missed it last night with the Brewers out on the West Coast, they were winners 6-0 over Seattle. meaning they're now at an 11-game winning streak. Brandon Woodruff, in just his third start of the season, after missing all of last year, went six innings, threw only 62 pitches, walked nobody, gave up just two singles, and your first-place Milwaukee Brewers were 6-0 winners. It was a pitcher's duel for the first few innings. Seattle's George Kirby carried a no-hitter into the sixth, but then the Brewers' bats came alive, four runs scored in that inning. And so the Brewers are one victory away from George Webb Restaurants having to dole out some burgers, and two victories away from tying the Twins for the longest streak in the majors this season, because Minnesota won 13 straight back in May. So we are now 100 games into the season. The Brewers have won 60. 60-40, first time in team history they've won their first, they've hit 60 wins in their first 100 games. And again, with a different roster than they had last time around. No Willie Adames, no Corbin Burns, no Devin Williams. But they do have some new faces, like Jacob Mizorowski, and he will be pitching tonight for the Brewers at Seattle. Pregame begins at 8:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Hayward. Then the Brewers will play again in Seattle tomorrow afternoon, pregame starting at 2:05. Thursday, they're off. They come home for a weekend series against the Florida Marlins, and then the Chicago Cubs come to town next week starting Monday. The Brewers back alone in first place over the Cubs for the first time since mid-April, basically. The Trump administration, the election of Donald Trump has a lot of significance. Again, a lot of things that folks warned were coming, that a group of people hostile to the Affordable Care Act are going to make sure that it's not as affordable. And that's exactly what is happening now, as health insurance companies say that their premiums will be going way up next year for people who buy their insurance on the Affordable Care Act marketplace. An analysis from KFF, formerly known as the Kaiser Family Foundation, showed that the average person who buys Affordable Care Act insurance will be paying 75% more for their premium. And of course, a big reason for that would be the reduction in the subsidies and the enhanced subsidies that came during the pandemic that helped make health insurance more affordable. With Republicans controlling Congress and the Trump administration wanting those subsidies to go away, as one example, if someone is paying $60 a month for their health insurance this year, it's going to be more like $105 a month next year. And as National Public Radio reports, people who are generally healthy might well decide that the higher premium is not worth it. They will go without health insurance. And then they're going to get sick or injured. With that many more people, an estimated 4 million more people without health insurance, it's going to lead to higher bills for them. Or if they can't pay it, it's going to lead to higher premiums for all the rest of us, because there will be more uncompensated care. And as more healthy people opt out of the market, the insurance pool will be left with those who cost insurance companies more, people who can't afford to go without health insurance, and so their premiums will go up again. And as much as Republicans have been crowing about this, and now they're of course referring to this as, well, this is just the unsustainable skyrocketing cost of Obamacare, according to Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana. Well, yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you attack the Affordable Care Act and make it less affordable, it makes it easy for you to say, gosh, look how expensive Obamacare is now. Yeah, because of you. To which I again have to remind people, and I'm never going to stop reminding people, the Affordable Care Act, derided by Republicans as Obamacare, is a Republican idea. It was created by a Republican think tank that did not want single-payer and or government-run health insurance. And so the idea was to continue using the private marketplace, but just help people afford private insurance. That's all the Affordable Care Act is at its heart, is, again, pooling our resources to help everybody have health insurance, because we all save when we're all covered or we all pay when more Americans aren't covered. It is actually that simple. And that's where the Republican idea came from and where the Obama administration said, okay, we'll try that at least as a start. And we can always work to improve it later. We can add a public option, for example. Have something like Medicare for All or Medicaid for All that covers Americans and have them compete. If the private sector of health insurance thinks it's so good, they shouldn't be afraid of competition. I mean, isn't that what we hear about public schools all the time? Is that they shouldn't be afraid of a little competition? But thanks to the late Senator Joe Lieberman, who withheld his vote, Democrats had to pull out the public option, so there is not one in the Affordable Care Act. And so it's all about these private companies, and if they're not getting premium subsidies from the federal government, of course they're going to jack up their rates. So once again, we are living that whole lesson of those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. And so we are about to repeat the cycle of higher premiums and people deciding to go without insurance and then ending up with big medical bills and then ending up with more medical debt and more medical bankruptcies and more uncompensated care, which is going to put more hospitals and clinics out of business, and it's going to raise premiums for all the rest of us. That ain't doom and gloom, folks. That's exactly what people tried to tell voters last year. And whatever the result last November, they chose the way they did. And this is what's going to happen going forward, as we're now seeing from these new estimates on what's going to happen with health insurance premiums on the Affordable Care Act marketplace coming up next year. It's a little quiet out there in Wisconsin politics. But it won't be for long. Somebody's going to make an announcement and things are going to move real fast. We're going to talk to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area coming up next here up north. Did you know the Recombobulation area is a 19-time Milwaukee Press Club award-winning opinion column and online publication founded by longtime Milwaukee journalist Dan Schaefer, and that the Recombobulation area is now part of Civic Media? If you didn't, well, then you must be new to these Tuesday visits that we do with Dan Schaefer from the aforementioned Recombobulation area. Get it at therecombobulationarea.news. Dan Schaefer, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Kreitlow. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
What are your impressions of the Brewers hitting 11? At what point do you go stand outside a George Webb hamburger restaurant and say, gimme, gimme, gimme?
Well, we got an exciting day for our Brewers here today. We've got a Mizorowski start and the chance to go 12 in a row here. So I am going to absolutely be watching that one and be ready to head right over to my neighborhood, George Webb's, as soon as the Brewers win this one.
Did you take advantage of either the other two times in our recent lifetimes that they did the hamburger giveaway?
I did in, 2018?
2018,
right, okay. Toward the end of the season there in 2018. So, okay. I was able to take advantage of that one. Brought my daughter. We got some cheeseburgers. It was a good time.
It does beg the question, maybe somebody already did it already, how much it costs that local restaurant chain to do it versus how much, you know, publicity, how much earned media they got out of it. It strikes me as probably a win-win for them.
You know, I grew up going to George Webb's. That was like a real high school hangout for us, just having somewhere to go. And I always enjoy a reason to go back and enjoy some George Webb's. That's for sure.
Good. Well, we'll be certainly hoping for the best for tonight here again. 8:05 pregame begins, Brewers versus the Mariners. We can say with a high amount of confidence that we have no breaking news. At no point has the governor's office called you or called me this morning with a heads up. So we continue to be on Evers' watch on whether he's running for a third term or not. I've enjoyed watching the rumor mill be wrong in both ways, saying, oh, he's about to announce he's not running. Oh, he's about to announce he is running. No, neither one came.
Well, I have stayed out of that part of the reporting of this. Good, you know, man. I'm certainly talking to people and trying to learn more about what's going on, but I have not reported anything either way about when the governor is making a decision, what decision he might be making. I have some inklings about where these things are going to go, and obviously you know where I stand on this. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, for whatever it's worth, I think Tony Evers has earned the right to make this decision on his own time. I think there's a lot of griping about, you know, the decision and what he should do. And obviously, I have said multiple times online and on the airwaves that I think Evers should not run for a third term. But I also think that he has earned every right to make this decision on his own time. You know, if he needs some extra time to make it, I think he's earned that. But, you know, it does. There are some consequences of that, right? I think it does mean that just about everything in Wisconsin politics with an eye on 2026 is in a little bit of a holding pattern. We're all just kind of waiting for that decision to be made for then all of the rest of the dominoes to fall.
And based on yesterday's headlines, whatever the governor decides, you can absolutely count that a year from now, Hunter Biden will come up with a new reason as to why that decision was made and ruin everything. So, good.
What in the world was that interview? Oh my goodness!
What in the world is Hunter Biden? But and it came out on the 1 year anniversary of President Biden deciding not to run, and honestly, nothing has been the same since that day. Well, we can now say officially 366 days later, what a year it's been.
You know? Oh, I know, and that was right on the heels of the RNC in Milwaukee. So I remember being just exhausted from spending long, long days covering the RNC in Milwaukee for the recombobulation area, finishing that up, having a couple days to decompress, and all of a sudden that news hits on a Sunday afternoon, and all of a sudden we're right back into it. You know, it's one of those moments where you're going to remember where you are when you heard the news. And now I think a year later, I think, you know, look, obviously Harris didn't win, but going from Biden to Harris, I think, saved several Senate seats, including, I think, Tammy Baldwin's for Democrats. I think it prevented a huge Republican majority in the House of Representatives. I think it stemmed the tide of a down ballot disaster. And I think I had been made aware of some polling here in Wisconsin for some, you know, races in the Wisconsin state legislature that were showing that even under new maps, the Republicans were going to be at near supermajority levels if Biden was going to be the guy at the top of the ticket. So I think that, you know, take a look at what happened in the state Senate in the most recent budget process. I don't think any of that happens if Biden stays on the ticket and you know, candidates have to spend so much time going on doors and justifying why Biden is still the candidate and all of that. And I think, you know, Harris and her campaign, there are things that I liked about it. There are things that I didn't like about it. But ultimately, I think she gave it a fighting chance, gave the Democrats a fighting chance to win the White House in the 107 days that she had the opportunity to do so. So I don't really have a lot of good things to say about Joe Biden or his family members who are trying to come out and justify the insanity of trying to run a campaign based on honesty and integrity while asking people to deny the evidence of their eyes and ears.
You mentioned the prospect of new maps, and new maps are something we're going to continue talking about in Wisconsin, even though we're in mid-decade, because as noted in your most recent newsletter, the independent redistricting effort begins anew in Wisconsin inside the effort to bring a long-term permanent solution for redistricting reform in Wisconsin. Tell us about the column.
Yeah, so I was writing this piece over the last couple of weeks here and got a chance to talk to a number of folks who have long been involved in the Fair Maps movement in Wisconsin and are kind of beginning the latest effort anew. And last year, when Tony Evers signed new maps into law in February of 2024, I think that was a momentous achievement for the state of being out from under a decade of the most egregious partisan gerrymander for any state legislature in the country, and moving towards a better, newer, fairer maps that were initiated by this remedial maps process that came through the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Huge achievement, but not a long-term one. It's a short-term fix to the problem of unconstitutional maps. And 2030 is, you know, just a few years away, and we're going to be back at square one without an actual legislative change to reform the way the state operates its redistricting process. And so I talked to people with Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and the Fair Maps Coalition and the League of Women's Voters and a number of volunteers who have been meeting for hours every week to talk about and hone this plan to try to get a quote-unquote Wisconsin model for independent redistricting in the state. And I think the plan that they have come up with is a pretty compelling one. And right now it is what is happening. It is kind of coming from the behind the scenes, you know, crafting the proposal, crafting the process stage to really bringing it to the public. So they've held a number of public events about this proposal over the past few weeks. I believe they had ones in Wausau and Green Bay and Dodgeville and Whitefish Bay, just north of Milwaukee. And so I think they're eyeing to have more of these in the coming months and eventually have a proposal that will bring legislation creating an independent redistricting commission for the state of Wisconsin that would oversee the redistricting process every 10 years. And then it would also include a push for a constitutional amendment to change to amend the state constitution to say that it is not the legislators themselves who are drawing the maps, who have oversight over the redistricting process. You know, kind of the old adage of the voters should pick their leaders, not the other way around.
So in a reminder that, again, I am just a humble former legislator who was ahead of my time. I recall in 2010 that another freshman state senator and I approached leadership and said, look, 2010 is going to be a tough year. And we want to run on a reform platform that includes an independent redistricting commission. We think we'd get a lot of mileage with voters out of saying, you know, let's take the map drawing out of the politicians' hands. And we were met with an expletive and said, no, 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 we're going to win and we're going to draw the maps. And I think we know how well that worked out. And so here we are 15 years later. Still talking about the need for an independent redistricting commission in Wisconsin that, again, I'm glad they're starting as early as they are because we don't know the results of the 2026 election, but they need to be ready come January of 2027 to try to put together, you know, enough of a bipartisan coalition where the party leaders from one or both parties don't go, well, blank that, we're going to win and we're going to draw the maps.
Yeah, and the goal for this is to have bipartisan support, and it is very purposefully not being crafted in partnership with any lawmakers from either major political party in Wisconsin. I think some of the people that I talked to for this are a little bit more skeptical of Democrats' motivations in the Fair Maps movement after some wanted to wait and have the courts draw the maps during the remedial maps process last year, instead of having the governor sign the maps that he himself proposed. So I think some were waiting for a slightly more advantageous map for Democrats. And I think some people, some of these pro-democracy advocates and Fair Maps activists were saying, wait a minute there. That's not really what we're here about. That's not what our priorities and principles are. And so I think there are some people in that space who are wanting to say, you know, we don't want either party to have the opportunity to gerrymander maps ever in Wisconsin. Again, we saw how it decimated the state's politics in so many ways. And so regardless of which party would be in power in 2030, the effort here is to get that power out of the power to draw the maps out of the politicians' hands.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. You can sign up for his newsletter, therecombobulationarea.news. And, of course, he's the political editor here at Civic Media as well. We talked about it being it's quiet here while we wait for the governor to make his announcement. Maybe you have the list right next to you, you know, that if the governor announces he's not running and the list of potential candidates, can you imagine how many phone calls are going to be made within like the first 5 minutes of that announcement? And I really am concerned that some of these folks, their phones might actually catch fire because so many calls are going to be coming into them going, do you have something to say? And we should know better. There's nobody that's going to announce within 5 minutes of the governor's announcement that they're running, even though we all want to be the first one to get somebody saying that they're running. So course, I guess we're just tempering expectations, I guess, is what I'm doing here.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, there are a lot of careers riding on what the decision the governor makes, right? I think we've gone through the list, I think, on this show or others a couple different times, yeah, about who the group of candidates might be to run for governor. But it's certainly going to be a busy time as soon as Evers makes that decision. And that's not to say, like, what the other implications of that might be, what, you know, races for attorney general or secretary of state, depending on who might be running. And I think there are, you know, the domino effect of this is going to be pretty profound, regardless of what way this goes for the governor, especially if he decides not to seek a third term. There are going to be a lot of changes in Democratic politics in Wisconsin. And once again, I will reiterate, I think that's a good thing.
And I will let folks know that, unlike back in 2018, there we do not go into this with a prohibitive favorite. Again, Governor Evers, then Tony Evers, not the governor, the state superintendent, took his time making a decision to run. And in that time, 10 to 12 other Democrats got into the race, knowing full well that if Evers decided, well, maybe I'm going to run after all, he instantly became the prohibitive favorite and emerged from that primary. But nobody knew until they did. All these other candidates got in. So once again, all these years later, we've got a waiting game coming up for Tony Evers. A local update is next for some of you. Others will come back here for some final news and notes from Lake Wissota, talking with Dan Schaefer. And remember, you can follow us all the time at upnorthnewswi.com and right here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, of course, Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air and Greg Bach here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Todd Albo will be joining them at 9:30. Dan Schaefer joins us right now. And I'm looking at some of the headlines of the past few days. And, of course, there was a lot said about the Coldplay concert at Camp Randall Stadium the other night, which had much less drama than the Coldplay concert, you know, a couple of nights earlier there in Massachusetts.
I wasn't at the show. Were there any CEOs at the show in Madison maybe got themselves in trouble? No John Menard sightings or anything like that?
None that were doing anything untoward, I'm happy to say. No. But I did ask, I was asking folks yesterday, and I thought maybe I'd ask you from a Milwaukee standpoint, you know, favorite concerts of, you know, people who'd been to Camp Randall for concerts. I mean, Kristen Lyerly had seen the Rolling Stones there many, many years ago. There have been concerts, you know, at American Family Field, Miller Park before that. Anything stick out to you in terms of, you know, those kinds of stadium concert venues, you know, outside of, say, the Summerfest grounds?
Outside of the Summerfest grounds. Well, I was thinking, I saw Paul McCartney at the what was the Marcus Amphitheater. That's obviously a memorable one for me. I was at a concert last year at American Family Field. I saw, you know, I'm a big 90s alternative rock guy, and so I saw Green Day and the Smashing Pumpkins at American Family Field last summer. That was a really fun one.
How was it? Did you because, again, with stadiums, you know, they're not necessarily built for that kind of sound, but maybe things are better now than they used to be. Did you enjoy it?
It was good. It was a little weird because we had, you know, when you're buying your seats, you're thinking about just like the way you buy seats for a baseball game. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's just like, oh, the stage is out in the outfield. I thought they maybe would be, you know, plop it right on top of second base or something like that. That wasn't the case. So we were a little bit further away from the stage than we had anticipated, but we still had a good time.
Okay. Let's bring up the conversation that Dr. Lyerly and I were having yesterday about primary elections, because, again, whatever the governor decides, there are races that already are shaping up to have primaries. On the Democratic side, of course, there's the 3rd Congressional District. It looks like the 17th State Senate District in southwest Wisconsin, perhaps the 5th Senate District over there in the Milwaukee suburbs. And that there are these campaign committees, you know, the ADCC for Assembly Democrats, the SSDC for State Senate Democrats, the Republicans have theirs, and so forth and so on. And then there's this whole discussion of whether the party is like anointing a favorite candidate to try to, you know, put their thumb on the scales for a primary. The the thrust of our discussion yesterday, which I think probably cheesed off everybody to one degree or another, is that primaries aren't inherently good or bad, but they sure can be handled poorly.
That's for sure. They can be handled poorly. But I think, you know, I think obviously there's like two sides to this, right? I think the people, especially fundraisers, largely want to avoid having a primary that gives them a longer runway to ramp up for the general election. And I think on the other side, I think there is Democrats have avoided primaries to their detriment, I think, in certain cases, because I do think there is this iron sharpens iron type of quality of honing your message, being challenged, and that improving your candidacy and your campaign in the process of a primary. Now, I will say that I think Wisconsin's primary timing makes things rather challenging. Mm-hmm. And I think if we moved the primary from that August date to the April spring election, like we have for presidential primaries, I think that would solve a lot of these problems. Because I think that if you have a candidate for the general election in April, then you give, you know, a full 6 months or more to get that general election campaign. If it's just after August, you know, it's pretty much a sprint from August through November. And I think we saw that in the 2022 Senate election, where Mandela Barnes, you know, all the candidates dropped out like right before the actual primary. And then I feel like the Barnes campaign seemed a little bit flat-footed when it came to responding to some of the attacks that seemed inevitable from the Johnson campaign and some of that stuff in late August and early September. And they just were kind of put themselves in a hole that they weren't quite able to get all the way back out of. So I think the timing of Wisconsin's primary does make it challenging. But I am generally more open or pro primary, I guess, in these conversations. But I think you're right that, you know, these organizations have a job to do. And you know, I don't think it's necessarily bad on their part to back a certain candidate either.
No. That and again, it doesn't mean anointed, but it certainly does mean access to resources. But they give them that access to resources because they see something in them that they think has potential. For my money, and again, I don't know that there's any one right answer, but I have a daughter living in Texas, and they just space everything 6 months apart. So you have a May primary and a November general. You have your partisan races in the even-numbered years, your nonpartisan races in the odd-numbered years. So literally every 6 months there is an election in Texas. But at least it's consistent. It's not of this, when's the primary again and what are we voting on again? I mean, you just know every May and November you're going to be asked to choose for these races. Now, I've seen the responses to our question of the week, and there's a whole lot of people that want much shorter campaigns. I think we all want that, but it's not necessarily the healthiest thing to have if a campaign is too short, right?
Right. And I think, you know, you need time to get your message out there. You need time to talk to voters and connect with people and all of that. I certainly, you know, would like campaigns to be shorter as well. And I think there are some systemic reforms that can be undertaken to address that. But we also have to recognize reality. This is the reality of campaigning in America in the 2020s. Until we have some sort of systemic reform, which seemed out of reach in the early years of the Biden administration when they tried to address some of these voting rights issues. Mm-hmm. I think this is the system we've got right now. So these are the boundaries in which we've got to play on the field here.
These are indeed. Sign up for Dan Schaefer's newsletter at therecombobulationarea.news. Dan, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mr. Kreitlow. Be well.
All right. And thanks to all of you for being part of our mornings here as well, powered by Up North News. Follow what we do at upnorthnewswi.com and on social media. And right here, mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. See you back here 6 a.m. tomorrow here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.